Is there anything more fascinating than human potential? In the Adelaide podcast, you'll learn how to harness your mental greatness and achieve extraordinary performance.
Holy shit, like somebody's actually shooting at me.
I am coming to you from an igloo.
That was what One Life Is about for me. It's just about going out there and living your life in the best way that you know how.
So your Ironman race, was that your first ever triathlon?
Yes.
That is, I will say, insane.
And I just think if your knickers are right, your day goes right.
This episode is brought to you by my very own newsletter. Each week, I cover one mindset tactic to help you enhance your mental fitness. It's free and you can sign up at adelaidegoodeve.com/subscribe. If I'm doing any meetups, events, special coaching programs, giveaways, or anything else that's limited, then I share it with my subscribers first. So check it out at adelaidegoodeve.com/subscribe. In your welcome email, you'll receive an exclusive interview with elite endurance athlete and scientist Olof Dullner. This beautiful ebook is perfect for an inspirational read while commuting or chilling out on a Sunday. You'll learn the mindset techniques that Olof uses to become the best he can be, which according to his friends is superhuman. It's really easy to sign up to my newsletter. You'll get the awesome interview with Olof, so check it out at adelaidegoodeve.com/subscribe. Thanks for listening, and now on to the great conversation. I hope your seatbelts are fastened and you're ready for takeoff.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Welcome aboard to Scandinavian Airlines and Star Alliance. It's your captain. My name is Tore Ulvestad. We are shortly starting up and setting course direct for Longyearbyen at Svalbard. And the flight time will be 2 hours and 50 minutes.
Vi takker for at du valgte å fly med oss I dag. Håper å se deg snart ombord igjen. Ha et riktig fint opphold. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Longyearbyen. For safety reasons, please remain seated with your seatbelt fastened.
On the 29th of April this year, I arrived in Longyearbyen, Svalbard, for a 9-day cross-country skiing expedition, where 2 Norwegian guides, 8 teammates and I skied from the east to west coast of Svalbard, camping along the way and pulling all of our gear and food behind us.
I think adventure is just really stepping into the unknown and stretching yourself. And when you do that, you learn about yourself.
I guess for me, adventure is more of a mindset. So, like putting yourself in unfamiliar environments and being prepared to just take whatever comes at you with a sense of humor and a sense of fun. And the things that come your way are often really amazing, which is great. Sometimes they are really difficult, which is also great because every time an adventure forces you to do something difficult, you end up doing something that you might not have done just by itself if it wasn't part of the adventure, and that teaches you really useful lessons. So, definitely you can make anything into adventure just by going in with that mindset of like, I'm just gonna try all the things, learn all the things and probably stuff it up, but that's okay. Smile, laugh.
Adventure is just the unknown. It's taking a chance, maybe trying something new and just embracing uncertainty. So whether that's taking a commute home from work and flipping it on its head, like, or going off on a 3-month expedition, it's all got its place, I think.
However, like so many of us, my fascination with the Arctic faded as I grew up, and it wasn't until I heard a lecture in 2010 on the forgotten Edwardian polar explorer Frank Wild that it was rekindled. One of Wild's quotes particularly stood out to me. Once wedded to nature, there is no divorce. Separate her you may and hide yourself amongst the fleshpots of London, but the wild will keep calling and calling forever in your ears. you cannot escape the little voices.
But I think the general consensus is just to go for it. And so many people have these big dreams and big ideas and things that they want to do, places they want to travel to, and they never take the first step. And that is the hardest thing, is actually just deciding, you know, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to make it happen. So going for it is a big one.
Pivotal moment, actually. I was on the way, I was in a taxi across London, and I was having this conversation, and my partner said to me, you know, have you actually thought about whether or not you could quit your job and what you would do with it? And to this day, I can remember how that made me feel. Like, it was a feeling I'd never felt before. It's kind of like when you're 18 and your parents are, you know, really strict, and you're kind of like still living underneath their rules, and you think, you know, that the year after that you're going to be able to, like, you know, have complete freedom and, you know, have boys to stay over whenever you want without asking their permission and go out until whatever time you want. Do you remember that feeling?
Totally. I 100% know what you're talking about.
And so I had that feeling for the first time. I was like, wow, okay, maybe there really is another life outside here. Maybe I could actually go and do the things that I'm really passionate about. And maybe I could find a way to create something that had more meaning in this world. And then what happened was, the next day I called up a friend of mine who'd been sort of mentoring me, and he'd been helping me kind of come up with the different ideas I could present to my bosses. And I called him up, and I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people who do follow me will know this part of the story for sure. He said to me on the phone, Sophie, a ship in the harbour is safe, but that's not what a ship was built for. Go sailing. And I just thought, damn, he's right. He's right. And I literally went home that night, wrote my resignation letter, walked into work the next day, sat down, handed it to my boss, and that was it. It was done. And I was out a month later.
Then I found out about wild camping, and that's basically camping outside of a campsite, in the wild, going as wild as you dare to go. And when I first did my first solo wild camp, it felt very extreme. It felt very weird. You know, people told me everything would go wrong, that I'd be mugged or attacked or eaten by a bear. You know, everyone was telling me all these different things that could go wrong, and I was made to feel slightly mad that I wanted to do it. And after that first one, when things did go a little bit wrong, but I survived it, I just felt so good and so addicted, and I knew I was going to do more. And I kind of upped the ante with my sleeping, and I made the sleeping even more adventurous than the waking moments of my life. And I just kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And I suppose the term extreme sleeps was a bit of a kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of nod to the fact that, of course, now it doesn't feel very extreme for me going and just camping on top of a hill in a bivy bag. But when you're not used to it, when it's a new thing for you, it does feel pretty extreme, and it does feel a little bit edgy. And the irony since then, of course, is that then in 2014, I became the first person to sleep at all the extreme points of mainland Britain, including the centermost point of mainland Britain, by myself on consecutive nights.
This is what happened to me. Say it out loud. Like, when you, I really believe that's a pivotal moment when you say something out loud, that you start to embark on your journey. So commit to it. So Facebook's brilliant for that. Like, announce it on Facebook, tell people, like, make it known that that's what you want to do. Because once you start and commit to something, all sorts of things happen that perhaps wouldn't necessarily have happened, and you start to move towards that. And so I'd say it out loud. And even if you don't know how you're going to do it, but you know what it is you want to do, get on with it and figure it out. Ask for help, reach out to other people, and just keep moving forward. And it's like a road with lots of blind bends. You can't necessarily see what's ahead, but you're moving down the road. Just keep going and, you know, be realistic, but dream big. People do amazing things because they dared to dream that they could. And I'd say 100% stick around positive people. If anybody is negative or doesn't have anything good to say about what you're doing, that's fine. That's up to them. But don't allow them into your sphere or what you're doing. Don't let their energy come and affect you. Like, that is the last thing you need. I mean, I'd say that in life in generally. There's two types of people. And it was funny, I was listening to a talk recently, and the guy stood up, he was the CEO of a company, and he said, in my whole career, he said, I've decided that my advice is very simple to people. There's two types of people, those with the glass half empty and those with the glass half full.
jettison those with the glass half empty, get them away from you, stay with the people whose glass is half full. And I just thought that's absolutely brilliant. That's what you need to do. And just, you know, if you've got a dream, believe in it, go for it, ask for help and get on with it.
I think it's all a journey. And I feel like I'm at a point now where I do some podcast interviews and it sounds really nice and easy, a lot of it. And it's never been easy. It never, at least for me, it's not getting easier. It's always like, there's always challenges. So when we look and we listen to these podcasts, we're like, wow, they just have it together. None of us have it together. Like, we're all just trying to figure this out as we go along. And we just kind of get to stages where we can kind of sit back and reflect and be like, whoa, wow, some things happened and that all kind of meshed together. And then you look at other parts and you're like, that just fell to crap. and it's totally normal. And I think that that's, I guess, takeaway is for your listeners, is just know that, like, it's always progress. It's always a progression. And if all of a sudden you feel like there's nothing happening, you know, maybe that's when it's time to, like, try something new. Do something totally that you've always wanted to do, whether that's, like, a paint-by-numbers, a pottery class, an obstacle race, a pole dancing lesson, a skiing, like, whatever it is. Maybe it's just walking your dog once a day. You know, just do it.
So your Ironman race, was that your first ever triathlon?
Yes.
That is, I want to say, insane. That blows my mind. Like, that is so, so rare, so rare.
Yeah.
So.
It wasn't really meant to happen. The Ironman was, but I had some other triathlons booked, but I got a shoulder injury, so I had to pull out, and then I got the flu, so I had to pull out of that one. So the Ironman ended up being my first one.
Oh my God, that's it's not unheard of, but it's pretty close to being unheard of. So, standing on the start line, looking around, what was your experience? What were you thinking? What were you feeling at the time? Any sense of, oh my God, I've never done one. I'm not sure I fit in here.
No, not at all.
Oh, wow. I had a feeling you were going to say that. I had a feeling you were going to say that.
So I practiced, and before I went out, the 3 weeks leading up to it, I was apprehensive whether I would be able to finish it, because I hadn't done all the training, so I'd been out for 3-4 months due to illness and injury. So there was that against me, and I was a bit like, oh, can I do this? Mentally, I knew I could do it. Physically, I wasn't sure if I could. But I did. I was also ill up in August and beginning of September a little bit, and the Ironman was the end of September. So I just really focused on recovering, and I got some really great nutrition advice. And that, I think, is what enabled me to turn up on the day being healthy. And I think before, like, packing, before I went to Spain, I was feeling nervous. But because I was aware of it, I just reframed it, if you like. Or actually, I just completely changed it using the skills I now have. And so when I got to Kaela, I'd already rewired my brain is to not feel nervous, but to feel calm. And also when I read an article, this was years ago, that athletes on the start line in the Olympics will feel the butterflies. Mm-hmm. But instead of feeling scared, they're gearing up, like this is really exciting for them, because the feelings between excitement and exhilaration and fear are really similar. So you can trick yourself. So I've been reframing that for quite a long time now. So I think when I got to the start line, I was just super calm because I've been doing breathing. With the NLP, what you can do is you can program parts of your body. So when you press them, you feel the calmness just wash over you.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that quite a lot. So I just turned up on the start line, really calm. And just I was just so excited. And my aim wasn't to do it in a certain time. And it wasn't, I had none of that pressure of wanting to be a podium finisher or anything. I just wanted to be the happiest person on that course. That was my goal, was to just have an absolutely brilliant time. I was slightly apprehensive. So Barcelona is really flat. And on the cycling course, the times were quite short because it was 2.5 laps. And every time you lapped, you had to be within a certain time. Otherwise, you were disqualified. So that slightly freaked me out, because at the pace I'd been riding, I would just be making those time barriers. But the road was just, it was a magic carpet the entire way. It was really flat. There were no pot, like in England, there are potholes and stuff. You've got traffic to worry about, traffic lights. There was none of that. You could just cycle.
Mm.
And I decided, my coach was like, just attack the downhills. That's where you can build up the speed and it'll take you for the uphills. And then when it's just going flat, you just focus on averaging that 25, 28 kilometers. There was a headwind that built up over the day going out of the main Ironman center. But on the way back, you had the most marvelous
tailwind
just taking you forward. So you could do 32 kilometers an hour on a flat. It was really fun. And it was just amazing.
Yeah, I do think, and they say, you know, the old urban myth that Ironman is 70% mental, 20% physical. And, I think the longer a race goes, the more that applies. So the more that you have the ability to stay in the moment, to stay calm and relaxed and have fun, the more you're increasing your chances of getting across that finish line. It's the people who lose their mind, either in the days leading up to it on the start line, or if something goes wrong, say in the bike leg and they have a flat and they lose their mind, they're the people who really struggle.
My health really started to deteriorate, with a severe chronic fatigue syndrome eventually forcing me to withdraw from university and to live at home with no signs of recovery. However, I'm very stubborn and I never give up, no matter what I'm told. And the one thing that gave me the inexorable drive to fully recover was my deep desire to live a life of adventure.
I've come to realise that there are actually three key elements to the mindset of adventure. Number one is resilience. Resilience means being able to influence your mind, your feelings, your emotions, and your physiology in a positive and useful way, independent of the environment.
And she told the story of like, be the egg. And what the story is if you imagine a pot of boiling water on the stove, and in that water is the environment that you're in, you have got no control over that boiling water. It's boiling away, it's bubbling away, it's hot. Now, if you put in that water an egg and a potato, you know, when the egg is in the boiling water, it boils, it becomes tougher, it becomes stronger. Whereas the potato, the longer you leave it in the boiling water, it just disintegrates. And so the key message from this is you have a choice about how you feel and how you let the environment around you impact on you. So you can either let the environment, like the bubbling water, invade you and make you crumble and then you disintegrate, or you can be like the egg. And it doesn't matter what is happening outside, it doesn't matter what is happening going on in the environment, but you are getting stronger, you are getting tougher, you are becoming the egg. And it's just, I think, it's just a nice, saying, just to think, you know, be tough, be strong, you know, I've got the focus and power and control over me, my feelings, my emotions, these are all my choices, as well as my attitude and how I choose to react to things. I've got no control over the terrain that the MDS is going through. I've got no control over the sand dunes. I've got no control over the temperature. I've got no control over, over the ground. But actually what I have control over is my attitude and my choice about how I feel and whether I feel positive or not, or whether I'm going to be miserable throughout this whole experience, or whether I'm going to embrace it and enjoy it. And yeah, so that was the be the egg, the mantra of just, you know, be the egg, be the egg.
It was interesting though, because everyone was like, oh, did you have any dark moments? And I was like, well, no, not really. Because there was one moment, it was on my third lap, and I did it in 13 hours 55, so I must have been going for 12 and a half hours by now. And I kind of took it on the water bottle and I chucked it in the dustbin. I was like, because my hips were seizing up, so I was finding the running but now a bit tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was like, look, if we continue walking at this pace, he was there when I threw the bottle in the bin. He was like, if we continue walking, we'll be done in an hour and a half. I was like, oh my God, screw that. I was like, no. And so I ran off and I was trying to think of ways to channel my mind in a direction I wanted it to go. And I had my mantras, but I was so drained, my brain was just drained of energy that the mantras just took up too much of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I read Paula Radcliffe, when she was doing her marathon running, she would count to 100, and then 100 would mean she'd run like a kilometre or a mile.
Yeah.
I tried it in training and I found it really worked. So I just started counting and it got me over the finish line.
So I took myself off to Ireland. And even that decision for me was kind of using that mental fortitude of not sitting at home sulking, which would have been really easy to do. But for me, it was really important to kind of get back up and go out into the world again and, you know, not sit there and sulk. And Ireland itself was incredibly hilly. And I'd only planned the adventure with about 2 weeks. So I hadn't really looked at the route in that much detail and was like, it'll be fine. I'll just figure it out. So on a daily basis, my legs were kind of screaming at me. There was one day where I had 3 punctures in a day and the roads were flooded. Mm. And all of those things, you know, are just miserable. I mean, that's fine. Like I look back and they're a happy kind of misery now. But when you're in that situation and your legs are screaming and you haven't seen anyone but sheep like the best part of 2 days, like it's a special sort of misery, I think. And that at that point, it doesn't matter how fit you are, the only thing that's getting you through that is your mental determination and resolve.
So I found that pretty much every time it does pass, and it's just reminding yourself this is a temporary state that you're in. Now there are times when you just can't get out of that space, and that you can do all the kind of tricks where you're like, I actually love this one. It's like the I'm forgetting the word right now, but it's totally the opposite of being positive. So it's taking a negative situation, and so say you're out for a hike or run or something like that, and it starts to rain, and you're like, this sucks. I'm like 2 miles from my car and it's raining. And then you remember you have like a windbreaker, and you're like, well, it could be raining and I don't have a windbreaker. Or you're like, it could be raining and I lose my shoe in the mud. And so you're always like, you're thinking of like, you create a worse scenario than the scenario you're in. Now, not saying that's the best way to get out of the funk, but if you can kind of be like, well, it could be even worse if it were like this. It could be even worse if it were like this. And then that does work for some people to pop them out of the negative, because you kind of just start thinking of the most ridiculous situations you could be in that are so much worse than the one you're actually, than like what you might actually be in that moment.
This is from the American military system, and it's very generalized. But it's basically, so it's 3 minutes without air that your body can survive for, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. And these are, you know, obviously these are very general. And, you know, if you're in a very cold environment, it might, you know, your body might need food earlier and things. So, it's sort of very generalized. But there are two more in that. And one of those is 3 months without company. We're pack animals, really. We need other people. So after 3 months, you start going, you know, what the sort of Americans term as bushy, where you start going a bit mad out in the wilderness by yourself if you don't have other people around. And the one that's for me is really, really important for wilderness, like survival situations, but which I think is really important for everyday life as well, is the 3 seconds without thinking. You know, three's like switching off for 3 seconds in your mind can mean that you like make a really silly decision. So what this is about basically is just being switched on all the time, being aware of your surroundings, listening, like we're just talking about, listening to that voice in your head as well, that's coming in from your subconscious, because your subconscious is trying to feed your conscious mind information all the time. And it's like listening to that and learning to listen and learning to trust yourself. For example, it was probably a couple of months ago now, I was out in Kenya, and it was the day before we started filming. We'd been scouting, we found these locations, and I was out there actually with my partner, Stani, and another guy, and we were rigging a rope bridge across a gorge for this sort of major A-list celebrity to come through the next day on. And I just finished rigging my side, and I was actually taking photos of the rigging so that, you know, when we came through filming the next day, because we moved so fast when we were filming, that I knew exactly where my rigging points needed to go for. So I was putting in gear protection for attaching the ropes to. And suddenly, out of nowhere, like this round, like it's this gunshot, and this round like exploded next to me in the sand, and sort of volley of gunfire. And I dived into this little cave. And it's that first moment of like, holy shit, like somebody's actually shooting at me, that was just like, that gets the adrenaline going, and it's in that moment there that you need to then learn to control your emotions. It's in that kind of, you know, when somebody jumps out on you, that fight or flight like moment, it's like in that moment you need to be able to control it and decide what you're doing with those emotions. So for me at that moment, it was then, you know, I spent a couple of minutes in this cave, like tiny little cave, but the gunfire was coming towards me. So I was like, right, I need to get back over to the other side where the guys are, because they had a much larger cave. So it was a case then of like sprinting, like sliding down these cliffs, because I couldn't go across the rope bridge that we just built, because it would have been too slow. So it's like sliding down these cliffs, running through the water at the bottom, which is got crocodiles in there, and scrambling up the other side. It's all really water-worn rock, and getting into the cave with these other two guys. We spent the next 15 minutes in there with rounds ricocheting off the roof of the cave above us. And that's, you know, this is not an isolated experience. Like, yeah, I don't regularly run into them, but I certainly have these experiences quite a lot. And it's all about, you know, being able to think under pressure. That's so important in those situations. I mean, as it turned out, you know, they weren't shooting at us. They just didn't know we were there. It was two tribes, one tribe. It was a time in Ant Kenya when they had a really, really bad drought. So animals and people were all congregating on watercourses. And one tribe had stolen a load of goats from another tribe. And then the first tribe had gone after this to try and get their goats back. And the local rangers had then set up an ambush directly above where we were working. So it was like three parties kind of shooting each other, and we happened to just unfortunately be right in the middle of them. But yeah, so those moments, it's definitely about dealing with those. And yeah, those are things that you can take to everyday life as well, you know, into sort of the office environment or whatever environment it is that you work in, learning to control those emotions.
We have the power to choose our lifestyle. So as I skied across Svalbard's beautiful landscape for the following 9 days, Svante's words echoed through my thoughts and my unconscious. However, taking that first step into doing something new, that leap into the unknown, can be scary. Or is change just terribly exciting?
Behind your greatest fear lies your biggest achievement.
It becomes apparent, you know, when I speak to a lot of these women, that they still suffer from fears. They're not superwomen, they're not extraordinary. They are everyday women who've just gone out there and faced their fears.
I got into my tent and I thought, no, I'm good, I'm doing this. This is amazing. I don't even know what I was worried about. And then came that moment where I'd got into bed, into my sleeping bag, set to put my tent, I was lying there, and I was thinking, right, okay, so I've got to sleep now. And I was sort of half falling to sleep when I did that thing that everyone does, they hear a noise outside their tent. And I was convinced suddenly that this had to be this axe murderer everyone was telling me about was lurking out to get me. And I was utterly terrified. And it took me a good 5 to 10 minutes to work up the courage. Like, I was just lying there thinking, what do I do? Thinking, oh, should I try and get one of my walking poles to use as a weapon? And should I try and blind them with my head? Like, all these scenarios were going through my head. And in the end, I just thought, I've got to face my fear and look out and see who it is. And I slowly kind of prized open the zip and had a look out to see what was going on. And there was a rabbit. It was just a rabbit. That was all it was. And I just kind of thought, oh, for goodness sake, Phoebe, of course it's a rabbit.
I've never taken off something that was utterly committing. Like, if I hadn't have got my takeoff right, I was going off the edge. Because you had to put enough momentum in to get the takeoff, which meant that if I needed to back out of it, I couldn't because I was going for it. So it's amazing what happens, actually. I think in those moments when you have to deliver, this adrenaline surges through your body and the fear, it's incredibly useful and it focuses everything on what you've got to do. And I just absolutely, I was so alert and aware. I did all my checks, I knew what I had to do, I positioned myself, I was ready, and I was just like, right, this is it, you cannot mess this up. And I say to people, you know, you can use that fear really positively. They say that, you know, fear won't kill you, incompetence will, you know, kind of, and paralysis, but fear won't kill you, it can really focus you. And it did. And so I was utterly committed, heart in my mouth, and I just went for it and it all went well.
Look at fear as being something that's separate from you. So it was actually this kind of cute little purple guy who looked like a potato. Well, it was actually a purple potato with just a label on. I think it had a label that said fear. And it was quite useful to have this interaction between the fear character and the person character, where the fear would be shouting at the character to say, like, oh, you need to do this, or you can't go and talk to that stranger, you can't ask that person out, you can't wear that in public. And it was just shouting. And at the beginning of the sort of interaction between the two characters, which was the story of the beginning before I'd started doing adventures, the character would always listen to what fear was saying, because that's just natural. That if you have fear that says you can't go get on an airplane or something, then you just listen, because you say, I can't do that because I'm too scared. But then this new character came in when I started adventuring, my adventure in Spain actually, called Survival Instincts. And Survival Instincts was a much more aggressive character than fear. So fear would say, well, you can't go and ask the stranger for water, because, you know, it's weird to talk to strangers, what if they kidnap you? And Survival Instincts would just say, well, we're not going to die with thirst, so you have to go and knock on that person's door and ask them for some water. Otherwise, you actually, like, there's no option, like, screw fear, just go do it. And so that was much more forceful. So for the first time in my life, I was really being forced to do a lot of things that I was scared of. So this fear character, you see it getting really indignant that all of a sudden it's losing its power to just scream at you, and then you do what it does.
The first step is just exactly what I was just saying. It's about, what are your stories? What are the fears you have? What are the stories that you tell yourselves about what you can and can't do? And I actually think this is the hardest step, because our stories feel very real. They feel authentic. They feel like fact. And it can be hard to see yourself as something separate from the story. So an example might be someone who says, I'm not a very good runner, or I'll never be a good swimmer, something like that. Or another example might be, you know, I'm worried about what people will think. That's a story that we're telling ourselves. So finding your stories, writing down your stories is step number one. Step number two is to rewrite it, or to reframe it in a way that's much more practical or positive. Even something as simple as saying, I'm not a very good runner yet, has a very profound and powerful influence on your brain, the way you see things, your perception of what you can and can't do. Another example might be to say, one of my clients tells herself, her story is around not being a very good swimmer. She tells herself, every time I get in the pool, I'm becoming a better swimmer. So it's really about looking for the positive, the possibility, the opportunity in what you're doing, which is a much more open mindset as opposed to the closed mindset of, I'm not a good swimmer, and therefore I will never be a good swimmer. So what's the problem? Or what's the point? And then the third step is to reward yourself, to celebrate. It's the little fist pump that you give yourself. When you catch yourself using your old story, when you say in passing to someone, I'm not a very good runner, and then you think, nope, I've got a new story for that, and you say, I'm just not a very good runner yet. Give yourself a little fist pump, and that process is really powerful, because you really starting to rewire your perception about what you can do and what you can't do.
I love this, because it's also the framework of quite a few tools we use in neurolinguistic programming.
Exactly. And I've sort of actually added another step onto that, indirectly, unofficially. It's sort of in the middle, is actually to reality check your story. Because, you know, humans have the confirmation bias, so it's easier for us to look and find and recall evidence that support our beliefs. So if your story is you're not a very good runner or swimmer, and you'd be able to recall every time in your life you had a terrible run, that you had to stop and walk, or that you were overtaken by an 80-year-old in the pool, and it just goes to prove that you're not a very good runner or swimmer. But the reality is there will be a lots of times in your life when you've done something that proves your story is not true. I had someone say to me only a few weeks ago, I'm not a very good runner. And I just said, didn't you just set a new PB, you know, for a new park run PB? And she looked at me as if to say, yeah. So, you know, that's a classic example of a little bit of evidence that proved that she is actually becoming a better runner every time she goes out the door, but she'd overlooked it or forgotten it.
During the last third of the trip, I really started to struggle. It was as if I couldn't walk. I had to really concentrate on doing opposite pole to ski, and my balance sucked. I found it difficult to turn, slow down, stop, ski uphill, and one day, I swear I spent more time sliding down on my ass than I did skiing. Although I did discover you cannot exhaust laughing at yourself, which is key in those moments. I felt exasperated, frustrated, and began to feel some discomfort. However, on numerous times on this trip, when I caught myself going into this negative state, I stopped my brain pattern by saying stop to myself and then asking myself, what state do I want to be in? What would it be useful to feel? Then I simply changed into a positive state and carried on. I also used a singing mantra to get myself in an awesome state, which went something like this. Every little cell in my body is happy. Every little cell in my body is well. I must say, every little cell in my body is happy and well. And to really step into this positive state, I would borrow the resources from Mountain Man, his volcanic explosive energy, endurance capabilities, immense strength, and insane skiing capabilities. And also the resources from survival expert Megan Hine, her stories of running through jungles and her incredible strength and resilience. It all just filled me up with bountiful amounts of energy, determination and strength. I imagined my badassery shining like gold all around me. And I imagined all of these amazing resources and feelings swirling all around me in this gold colour, filling me up, seeping in to every cell and every fibre of my body. And I would continue to feel these things and see myself glowing gold until I was really in a great positive state. And echoing the wise words from adventurer Kiko Matthews in episode 8 of the show, failing doesn't exist, it's just learning.
I got this thing like about failure, and I think it's a really crappy word. Because it's not actually failure, it's actually just learning. And when you're a kid and you're at school, you constantly like, you fail in a question, you get a question wrong, and all that happens is the teacher just teaches you again, and eventually you get it right. And it's like that with life. You know, I don't go out there going, oh, I can't do it because if I fail, I was like, I'm going to do it. If it doesn't work out, all that's happened is I've probably developed a bit of resilience along the way. I might have learnt a new skill. I've probably met a new person. I've probably learnt some new knowledge, and it might not have turned out how I wanted it to turn out, but I've grown within a little bit. So I think that the idea that failure doesn't exist and it's just learning, it kind of like really helps me kind of just be like, yeah, whatever. I think my parents might disagree with this whole conversation.
What's the best advice for handling failure, do you think?
Embrace it.
Yeah,
because if you're going to do something new, you're going to fail. You're going to be rubbish to start with. Yeah. But that's awesome. It means that you're trying, that you're exploring. And I think when you're new at something, you're much more allowed to fail. Whereas if you're like an expert, it makes it much harder to fail. So embrace the newness and failure is what will allow you to grow and find out which bits you like doing and which bits you don't. Mm-hmm.
And by falling over many, many times, I learnt I was just more resilient than I thought. That going fast downhill and falling isn't as scary as it seems. That just before you start your period, due to hormone fluctuations, you actually do lose some coordination. And I assure you, it's a thing, as even Wimbledon tennis players say they get this. And I wouldn't have embarked on this journey across the east to west coast of Svalbard with Nuland Expeditions if I hadn't started getting back in touch with my wild side 6 years ago when I became unwell. I found connecting and cultivating your wild side takes commitment, dedication, action, and putting aside the time to follow your curiosity and listen to your intuition. I like to think of my wild side as my compass, helping me navigate through life.
You know, when you walk into somewhere and you get like an instant like feeling, you know, it might be a negative feeling like, oh, I need to get out of here right now, or like there's a feeling of like calm and serenity. And I think that is, I've actually learned over the years actually to listen to that. To that part of my brain that's telling me, because often it's telling me that something's wrong. And whether it's because, you know, if you think about how our minds work, you know, I think psychologists now say that something like 95% of thought processes, like sort of mental processes, happen beneath the surface, like subconsciously. You know, so I think a lot of it happens, like what's going on in our brain happens subconsciously. And that's to protect, you know, the conscious mind from all these stimuli that's coming into your environment all the time that you're being bombarded with. And it would be overwhelming if that came into your conscious mind. So I think sometimes with those situations is that there's like parts of information that's being sent through, so not the whole story. So if you've walked into somewhere and it's telling you, right, you need to get out of here, you really need to listen to that, because it's something in your conscious mind is picked up from your subconscious but hasn't had the full picture to say why. But it's really worth listening to that. That has kept me alive on quite a few occasions.
I've even recently done it where I went to an area, started doing it, it got to about, it was probably about 11:30, and then I heard people coming around and I thought, do you know, this isn't a really great spot. And I thought, I'm trying to see another, or I might go back to the car. And again, you know, I've been doing it for over 10 years and I'll still bail on it if I think this just doesn't feel right. And I think, yeah, definitely trust your gut, trust your gut.
So we started to learn how to listen to just what was left, which was kind of our gut or our heart feelings guiding us. And that's started to become a new way of approaching life and approaching things, that what we wanted to do in the world and who we wanted to be in the world and how we wanted to experience what was happening around us all the time. And so I think that that's really, I mean, I studied law and politics, and I think I was headed in the path of going and working in corporate or something along those lines. And all of a sudden I was realizing that actually I want to enjoy life. I want to spend time outdoors. I want to be creative. And I can do that by just going with what feels right rather than what feels scary, what feels too scary not to do.
So for all of you feeling stuck in your life, no matter where you are, I want you to know that you have the invincible power of choice. You can choose the lifestyle and life you want to live by stepping into the unknown, embarking on your heroic journey, and getting back in touch with your wild side.
We live in a world where, at the moment, our modern world, where like information is so accessible, you know, and I think that, you know, people are always searching for answers online, you know, in books and things, whereas actually, you know, I think that genuinely we all hold the key, like we all hold the answers, you know, to those questions about, you know, life and, you know, what we want. And I think it's like, it's really important to just to listen to yourself and, you know, facing up to truths that, you know, might be painful, but actually in the long run will make you happier.
I think it's all a journey. And I feel like I'm at a point now where I do some podcast interviews and it sounds really nice and easy, a lot of it. And it's never been easy. It never, at least for me, it's not getting easier. It's always like, there's always challenges. So when we look and we listen to these podcasts, we're like, wow, they just have it together. None of us have it together. Like, we're all just trying to figure this out as we go along. And we just kind of get to stages where we can kind of sit back and reflect and be like, whoa, wow, some things happened and that all kind of meshed together. And then you look at other parts and you're like, that just fell to crap. and it's totally normal. And I think that that's, I guess, takeaway is for your listeners, is just know that, like, it's always progress. It's always a progression. And if all of a sudden you feel like there's nothing happening, you know, maybe that's when it's time to like try something new, do something totally that you've always wanted to do, whether that's like a paint by numbers, a pottery class, an obstacle race, a pole dancing lesson, a skiing, like whatever it is. Maybe it's just walking your dog once a day, you know, just do it.
I just feel so passionately about people just kind of hopefully us just like taking control of our lives. And, you know, I have a lot of friends who are basically, it literally breaks my heart. Like I meet up with them and they've just had the life eaten out of them by life, you know, and coming to the end of the year, everyone's tired. Everyone's got so many demands and everything, which all trying to juggle with. And it just makes me so sad to kind of see people do that. And then once you start talking about something that is like something they're really excited about, you can visibly see people change and light up and come alive again. And that is my thing. That's what One Life Live It is about. Like, just do the things that make you feel alive. And as easy as it is, you know, tapping away, doing our work behind the computer and doing everything on our phones, got to get out and see the world. Got to get out. Like this morning in London is the most beautiful morning, and it would be such an amazing time to like go for a little walk first thing in the morning. You don't have to get up early because sunrise is at like 7:30, but just taking those little moments of every day to just go out and do the things that make you feel alive. That's what I would love to say.
You shouldn't let anything stop you doing what you're really passionate about and want to do. And so, you know, the more that, you know, things like this podcast, for instance, the more things that's telling people and showing people that being a woman is no barrier to anything, the better.
If your knickers are right, your day goes right. So on every trip I've been on, I've taken the exact number of pairs of knickers for the exact number of days. And that, I mean, in mountaineering terms, that's absolutely ridiculous because people take just a few pairs, but they don't take up that much room. And I honestly believe that, you know, in the morning when you get dressed, when you open your underwear drawer, I think a lot of us do it. We look at it and think, what mood am I in? What am I feeling today? And I just think if your knickers are right, your day goes right. So
I sometimes try and speak to my gut, but it always just tells me to eat more ice cream.
Maybe you do then. Maybe you need the ice cream to stimulate the thoughts.
I think so. That's what I told myself.
Yep. If in doubt, eat ice cream.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Just one more thing before you take off. If you would like to achieve extraordinary performance, then do sign up to my weekly email at adelaidegadeev.com/subscribe. Each week, I send out just a short email containing one mindset practice that'll help you perform at your best. You'll also receive my free ebook with superhuman Olof Dullner on developing a tough mindset, something you do not want to miss. You can just go to adelaidegadeev.com/subscribe and sign up there for free. I am also on Instagram at adelaidegadeev and would love to connect with you on there too. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope to see you next time.